Thank you, Alessia. Thank you for the invitation to give a seminar here. I'm very glad to be here to present this work that I did in collaboration with Roberto Emparan here at Barcelona, Martin Sasieta, Maria Tomasevich, and Benson Wei. The title, as you said, it's about this quantum records, and I will explain what do I mean with that. And I will talk in particular about two aspects, the thermodynamics and the holographic complexity. So with this, let me start defining what is that I mean with a quantum black hole, that is the quantum black hole that is in the title. So we could say that despite the lack of a precise definition of a quantum black hole within a complete quantum gravity theory, one can still gain some insights using some semi-classical approximation. One sensible approach is to treat gravity classically while fully accounting for the back reaction of all the other quantum fields. And this is what is called the study of the semi-classical Einstein equation this year. So we know that for the calculation of the Hawking radiation, for example, we usually assume that the space-time is classical, but the quantum thermal radiation, it has, however, energy, and this will affect, can affect the space-time geometry, creating this back reaction. And this is the equation that describes the back reaction. So we have that the classical geometry is modified by the effects of the quantum fields. And even though this is not the ultimate answer for what we could call a quantum black hole, let's say that we are studying this problem to have insights and interaction between GR and quantum matter. So what do we have here? Let me analyze a little bit with more details of this, this equation. So on the left-hand side, we have the classical Einstein tensor and the metric. And on the right-hand side, we have quantum matter, the quantum matter renormalized stress energy tensor. And this includes many, many fields. In this way, therefore, we have the suppression of graviton fluctuations, and we consider we suppress this gravity fluctuation by including a large number of matter degrees of freedom. This is also interesting because from the holographic point of view that I'm going to mention later, we also consider a large number of fields. Now, solving this equation usually is a difficult problem. It's a difficult problem because it's a coupled system, as usual in GR, but so we have the metric plus the quantum fields, and it's very hard to solve this simultaneously. Usually sometimes, what we do is to add some perturbation, then solve again the equation for the stress energy and then put back the solution and do that iteratively. So the approach, one of the standard approaches to use perturbative back reaction, but this gives a limited insight of being a perturbative approach. However, there are some situations in which this equation can be solved exactly. One example is in two-dimensional models, and in these models, therefore, we have a very simplified situation. But another approach that it has been another approach that has been considered is using a holographic reformulation. More details. It was discussed with details in this paper, for example. And the holographic approach is, when I talk about the holographic approach, I refer to the ADS-CFT correspondence. We have all heard about that, and we know that there is this duality between a quantum and gravity in ADS, that we call the bulk, and the conformal theory living on the boundary. So I just here the picture of the cylinder representing ADS, just to say that I'm going to take a constant time slice of this cylinder in the next few years. So In this holographic approach, therefore, we have that the stress energy tensor represents the conformal field theory in a large N expansion. Now, conventionally, ABS-CFT has a fixed boundary geometry. But what we want to do, because we want to have gravity, is to make this boundary dynamical. There are two different ways to make the boundary dynamical. And one way that has been studied, for example, in this paper, is to modify the boundary condition, such a way to have to set the boundary free. But there is also another approach, that is that of moving the boundary inwards. And this is possible using the so-called brainward holography. So the basic idea of brainward holography is that you want to recover gravity localized on a lower dimensional surface of some higher dimensional bulk spacetime. So for example, in this case, as I say, I have a section of the ABS. So this is the bulk, this is the boundary, and it's possible to cut the geometry using a Planck brain. Cash and Randall in this paper, they realized that it's possible to introduce a d minus one compared to the dimension of the d dimension of ABS, a d minus one dimensional graviton massive mode that is localized on the brain. And so let's say there is a massive graviton bound that is bound state that is localized on the brain. So the gravity on the brain is not of the ordinary kind, but it's going to be a massive gravity theory. However, when this brain, so this brain can move in this geometry. So when this brain is close, very close to the boundary, the graviton is almost massless. And this is going to be the regime of interest for us. However, we will analyze different, we don't need to have the brain really close to the boundary, but this is the regime that we are mostly interested in. And in this way, you get dynamics on the brain. So we're gonna use brainward holography. Let's see a little bit let's understand a little bit which parameters are involved, and how they change the aspects. So the brain tension is going to be proportional to these parameters. And as I said before, in this case, the case in the center, when this parameter n is positive and included in this regime, then we have a massive gravity theory on the brain. And then there is another limit that I just mentioned is this one, when l it goes to zero. So here, this is this describes an almost massless graviton. And there is also another limit that we can take. And in this case, the brain goes in the center and the graviton mass becomes as large as possible. And at this point, we just recover the standard gravity in our 4D bulk. So the brain, it's only, it's not making anything here. And there is only the Z2 symmetry between the two parts. So I draw this frame like a little bit thick just to for visual reason, but you should think about that as infinitesimally thin. Now what we wanna do is to put a black hole on this frame. So the situation that we are going to have is this one. So there is a black hole in the bulk that is intersecting the brain. So it's intersecting the brain here. And then as usual, we have a 4D theory in the bulk that has an asymptotic boundary where the three-dimensional CFT lives. And the CFT tree lives also on the brain. The bulk spacetime is a solution of the vacuum Einstein equation with the negative cosmological constant in 4D that we are going to call L4. And the three-dimensional cosmological constant can be obtained from the four-dimensional cosmological constant and the Brin tension, like a description in the map. Also, another point that is important is how this Brin is attached to the boundary. And in particular here, the holographic setup, it brings automatically or in a meaningful way the transparent boundary conditions here between the boundary and the Brin. This also means that we are considering the defect CFT using this construction. Another thing is that now we take two copies of the same system, basically. So we remove this space on one side of the Brin, and we erase this part, and we consider another copy of the same system. The gluing between the two parts of the spacetime is done using the Israel gluing condition along the Brin. Now, another point is that that will be also clear later, is that the Brin that we are considering is purely tensional. That means that we don't have to add any Einstein-Hilbert term to the action of the Brin. The Brin, it has a gravity theory that is purely induced from the four-dimensional bulk, so removing this part.
Sorry, there is a question by Laura.
Just, yes. So your Brin, it's a time-like surface?
The Brin, it cuts the whole ADS space-time in a particular. So maybe it's gonna be clear later with when I show the metric that it cuts the whole space-time, the whole ADS space-time at a particular coordinate.
What is the genre? Like, is it time-like, space-like, null?
It's just cutting the whole ADS space-time.
But I can cut the whole ADS with a null surface, for instance. I'm asking that because if it's a null surface, I can glue to null surface without having to create a Brin tension, without having to have an energy momentum tensor. So it's a simple question of the causal structure here.
Maybe it's going to be clear when I show the metric that it's not a null surface, but it's in a particular way. We need to put that in a particular way in the construction. So I can say that the metric that is describing the whole bulk spacetime is the so-called ADS force metric. And this metric, it allows, because of the symmetries of the systems, it allows to put there a Brin that is satisfy exactly the fact that the extrinsic curvature should be equal to the intrinsic metric. And this happens when, for example, when X is equal zero in this construction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it is time. Yeah, it is time-like.
Okay. Yes, from the metric, I think it's the best way to see that it's from the kind of metric that is describing the space time that we have.
Maybe another question you're going to talk about. Here you're talking about, you know, particle Brin in a very static space-time, but what if there's gravitational radiation in the, like if I'm in gravity at some point in the bulk, there's gravitational radiation. How do you locate the Brin there? Like what's the, this is often the challenge in non-perturbative gravities to have a way. I mean, we put boundaries, but in that case, how do you,
do you have
a prescription for where is that Brin going to be?
This Brin is completely dynamical. That means that...
I think the background, if the background is dynamical, suppose that the background is not just a black hole, but it's a black hole with, you know, gravitational radiation moving in.
I suppose that at that point, one needs to understand what kind of... I think the metric can still be put there, but... If there are some fluctuations, for example, given by the radiation, then the metric, the Brin is going to fluctuate as well. So since the brain that we're putting here is dynamical, then I think that solving the Einstein equations for that kind of solution that you have in mind, then at that point we'll give the description, the right description for the brain. But this situation is completely dynamic. I think the challenge is try to find then a solution that can describe, or if in this case, if it's possible to attach, for example, a black hole to the brain also in the case. But using perturbation should be possible, and the brain should react to this kind of perturbations because it's dynamical. But in this case, I am just analyzing a static solution, so not considering perturbation on the metric. But yeah, I think in the more general setup, so maybe if it's not possible with the Karsh Randall setup, I think it should be, maybe in the Randall syndrome setup, maybe it's also possible. It's possible to do this, to consider this kind of system when there is the gravitational radiation. However, in order to solve the back reaction, we need to have a suppression of the graviton, well, the graviton fluctuations. So it's an interesting question. Maybe there are some ways to put the brain in such a way that satisfy also this condition. I don't know if...
Yes, thanks, Sonia. You can go ahead.
Okay. In this case, we just consider this, we are considering this specific setup that is given by the Karsh Randall and this particular solution that can be described by the ADS force metric. So in this case, we have a radial coordinate. So there is the metric is can be described in this way, and there is a kind of polar coordinate x. We have a conformer factor here in front of the metric, and then a blackening factor or a redshift factor here. And so we see that in the analysis of this kind of metric, it's important. There are some parts that are important, in particular. So the roots of this function, h of r, are the Killing horizon of dt. And the real roots of gt are the symmetry axis of dφ. And since h and g, as you can see, they are cubic order, the analysis of those roots tends to be a little bit important. And the question of regularity at the symmetry axis of the angle is one of the central points in the analysis of all symmetries. Here, maybe you can also see, so there are different parameters that enter in the metric. Two of them, we have already seen them. So one is this L that is related to the brain position, and it's the inverse of the tension. The other one is the curvature radius on the brain curvature radius. And then there are some other parameters there, and it will be clear in a few minutes what's the meaning of these parameters. In particular, this mu, for example, it gives the quantum corrections on the brain. And from the figure before, maybe you noticed that this black hole is not in the center. It's not in the center of ADS4 because it's accelerating. And these parameters are related to the fact that the black hole is accelerated.
Sorry, Antonia, what was kappa? I missed it.
Kappa is a discrete number. It's the standard 0 plus or minus 1. But you will see in a moment that it's very clear what's the meaning of these two parameters when we go on the brain. So in this case, they describe the solution, they describe different solutions. So this kappa can be 0, 1, or plus, or plus 1, or minus 1. And you will see that this is a very meaningful thing in from the brain perspective. So as I say, these two parameters, we have already seen them. And also, since I'm still talking about the four-dimensional metric, I would like to mention that...
Antonia, there is one more question by David.
Sure.
Okay, a very simple question. So is this like a spherical symmetric and is the one which is slowly accelerating, so you have only one black hole, or is it actually the one with two black holes?
There is only one black hole.
So you are basically constructing the one copy and then you will be doing the other one, somehow gluing them together. But you are using the slowly accelerating. Okay, thanks.
And the metric you're writing is just a solution of Einstein equation, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So this is the solution in of the Einstein equation in vacuum plus the cosmological constant for the four dimensions. And I just would like to mention that even though I'm not going to talk about this situation, that there is also a rotating ADS symmetry, where we have another parameter, that is the rotation parameter, and the metric is similar, but complicated by the fact that we have the rotation, but the bulk structure is similar to Kerr ADS. That means that we have an inner and then a outer horizons, there is a ring singularity. There are interesting features related to the rotating metric. Some of them I will mention briefly during this talk, and they are described here, but others are described also in this paper by Roberto and Maria. So what happens when we introduce the brain? So to introduce the brain into the spacetime, we need the surface whose extrinsic curvature is proportional to the intrinsic metric. And the metric on brain is obtained because of the symmetry, the axially symmetric symmetries of the solution, we can put the brain at x equals zero, because basically the metric is totally umbilical. And what happened when x is equal to zero? I just simplify these factors. You can see visual here. And the final metric that we get is this one. Now, that's why I just postponed up to here the explanation of these two parameters, because here it's very clear what's the meaning of this parameter. So if we take the classical limit, mu equals zero, then you see that when kappa is equal to minus one, we get the BTZ metric. And in the other case, when kappa is equal to plus one, then one gets the global ADS3 or conical ADS3. When instead mu is different, it's not equal to zero, then in that case, for example, in the case kappa equal minus one, that is the case that we are mostly considering here, one gets what we call the quantum BTZ, because there are these quantum corrections here that are related to the back reaction. Now, the introduction of this term here has several consequences. One is that there are different properties of the horizon, so because the backline factor is different, and also that the quantum BTZ, differently from the BTZ, it has a curvature singularity. So it's something that the BTZ doesn't have, and this is going to play a role later. So the structure of the singularity changes when we go from with respect to the BTZ black hole, and this is going to play a role later. The interpretation of this metric, therefore, is that it is a solution of the theory of a theory of 3D gravity. That also includes higher curvature terms. We will see that because basically it comes when construct the effective field theory there. And it's coupled to a large number of quantum conformal fields, namely the holographic conformal field theory dual, that is dual to the four-dimensional part. So it has an holographic interpretation. What happened when we put the black hole here on the brain? So this is the same picture that I had before. These are the same picture. So this is the case where this parameter is positive defined, no extremal cases. And in this case, we have a black hole plus the CFT. In the case in which L goes to zero, therefore the brain is closer and closer to the boundary. In this case, when kappa is equal to minus one, one can obtain the BTZ geometry. And this has been also studied. This case has been studied in this paper, and can be obtained from a double weak rotation of the Schwarzschild-Eddy S4. Also, in the other case, as I mentioned before, we find again the ADS, the four-dimensional ADS backcourt. The stress energy tensor can be calculated, and it has the stress energy tensor for a CFT3 in for a thermal CFT in equilibrium with the backcourt. And indeed, it has the generic structure of the renormalized stress tensor conformal fields in the presence of the PTZ black hole. We performed the calculations. I'm not showing the details here, but we performed the calculation. You can find that in more detail in the paper. We also compared this to other calculations that have been done for the free conformal scalars in the PTZ. And we also compared that to other calculations done in a holographic way.
So here by the energy momentum sensor, you mean just the jump into the extrinsic curvature, right? The induced.
You mean
the energy momentum sensor of the thin shell, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that is
described. When you put the expectation value, it's at this stage, it's just a classical evaluation.
Well, the fields that we are considering are quantum fields, and the stress tensor is renormalized, and it's the one that it resolves the.
Okay, so then I'm asking, there's another stress, if you have a brain, there's another stress tensor, which is just
the delta function.
Israel, yes. So
yes.
Is it different than the one you're talking about?
In this case, this is the stress tensor of the conformal the CFT stress tensor that I'm showing here.
Okay, but the jump is a classical object.
Yeah, right? I was yes. In that case, it's just the gluing using the Israel in the standard way, and then there is the delta function that is given by the brain. Yes. Now, these were some aspects of this metric that we have seen, but there is also another interesting aspect that is that this metric can also be interpreted from the doubly holographic point of view. So what is the doubly holographic interpretation? So the trick is that the idea is that instead of considering a bulk theory with a small number of fields, like for example in supergravity fields, you can couple the theory to an holographic CFT in the bulk. And to do that, to see how it works, I just sketched here, and then we are going to see that for our particular system. So let's suppose that you start with a CFTD, and then you couple it in a bottom-up perspective to a higher dimensional CFT, the bulk. So this, at this point, these two CFT, this system can be replaced in the brain perspective. So we can replace this CFTD using holography with an IDS D plus one dimension. And since here there are, so I also showed that before there were transparent boundary conditions, then we are also going to have a conformal field theory on this side. The final doubly holographic perspective is to view the whole setup as a D plus two again, so applying again holography as viewing as a D plus two dimensional system, ADS, without here in the bulk, it's completely classical. But then there is the brain that we have seen before, and then there is the boundary CFT here. So now this is just a dynamical the brain is just a dynamical D plus one space time in the two plus D dimensional bulk. And the effective field theory of gravity in the brain is just a localization of the gravity that we have in this D plus two dimensional area space time, like in the Karsh-Randall or Randall-Sandham setup. In our setup, how do we translate this doubly holographic perspective? So we can start with a three-dimensional CFT on a space that is a topological sphere times the time. And then we put a two-dimensional defect on the equator. The second step that then is to replace the defect by a three-dimensional ADS-T treaty. Now, since the two-dimensional defect is in a thermal state, then the ADS-3 contains the black hole. And there are this quantum back reaction effects on the safety tree. So here I show that there is a double copy of this system. And then in the end, the final step is to put the whole system in a four-dimensional mark. So in this way, using the W holographic approach, we have translated the quantum effects on the brain to a purely classical four-dimensional perspective mark. And the leap that we are taking to have this classical prescription is that we have a central charge that is associated to the 3D conformality theory, and the central charge that is associated to the 2D conformality theory. So both are very large, but the ratio between two is lower than one. And this means that the number of degrees of freedom of the C2 are much larger than the numbers of degrees of freedom given by the C3. And that means that in this situation, it's possible to have an effective fit theory, because in this limit, it's the limit in which the brain tension is very large. So this limit corresponds to the limit in which the brain tension is very large, and the brain is close to the boundary. So it's the limit where the small l it goes to zero, basically.
So there is a question by Laurent.
Yes. Yeah, I have a question. I mean, it's about this classical quantum. I guess the same question as before. I'm maybe confused. So far, I see only a classical system, which is classical GR. I don't see where does H bar comes from? Like you keep talking about quantum fields, but it's still classical gravity. There's no quantization there. Where do you get the quantization?
So if I have a conformal field theory on the boundary, then that I consider as a quantum theory. And we saw that this conformal field theory can leak using the transparent boundary condition on the brain. But this brain, it has also this black hole attached. So there is.
But how do I see that? All I've seen so far is a classical GR system with a classical brain in it. I mean, you're telling me it is a quantum CFT, but how do you demonstrate that to me? How do you demonstrate that there's an H bar appearing? And is that a postulate? Is that, do you have a calculate? I'm kind of confused where the quantumness comes, where does the quantization appears from?
Would you agree that on the boundary you have a quantum theory?
No.
I don't know. No, so far I only have classical GR. That's why I don't even understand why on the boundary it's a quantum theory. Yeah, I guess that's the level of my question. It's very elementary.
Where is Newton's constant?
Where is H bar? I mean,
well, somewhere it's either H bar or G or H bar G.
Well, G is there, right? There's classical GR. So,
but H bar, where exactly is G?
Well, for example,
in the gravity, G is on the gravity.
Yes.
So, I mean, I'm used to have gravitational system with boundary conditions and there's dynamics including the boundary, but it is still classical. So,
would you agree that using a holographic approach, then I can relate a gravity theory in the bulk, relate that to a quantum field theory, to a conformal field theory on the boundary?
The thing is that I'm asking for evidence for, I see a correspondence classical, it's fine, but at some point I need to, if I don't quantize the gravity in the bulk, how do I quantize the boundary?
Yeah, using this approach, the holographic approach, there is this, this, this correspondence between the quantum theory that is given by the conformal fit theory on the boundary and the completely classical theory. Maybe I can also say that, when probably already in the setup of Karsh-Randall and Randall syndrome, when you have a graviton, then you're considering a theory that is already, if I tell you that there is a graviton mode localized on the brain, that is a quantum.
Well, it depends if the graviton is just a classical wave or you know, at some point I can talk about graviton without, as a wave of a classical space-time. So I'm just saying, what parameter in your quantum gravity? Where is H bar? Sorry, it's maybe a basic question. I understand, but
I think that the energy momentum tensor should have the H bar there.
No, so I agree. I have an energy momentum tensor, but as we discussed, it's still a classical quantity, right? It's the Israel jump.
There is the Israel, but there is also the stress energy tensor that comes from the conformal field. Indeed, the energy momentum tensor that I saw, it was the typical energy momentum tensor of conformal field theory. It's traceless for a thermal field theory. So it's here that it's going to get the H bar, it should be visible there. It's visible in the presence of the quantum matter on the right-hand side of the semi-classical Einstein equation.
Is the energy momentum tensor just some kind of asymptotic symmetry charge when you reach, right? Is that, because it has to inform the bulk geometry, like how the, is that what you call the energy momentum tensor? It's also the...
So what I call the energy momentum tensor is given exactly this in this description. So for example, I can see that if there are some excitations, some modes here, they can link to the brain, and then the whole system is going to be going to include these fields that were here, and they can link via this transparent boundary conditions to the brain. So in the end, I'm going to have a quantum system that is coupled
to the classical
record,
to the best
ideas. So there is a question or comment by Lee? Yes, could I ask the question a different way? Because I've been for many years probably confused about this. There is a classical ADS-CFT correspondence where this H bar equals zero. On the left, that's the general relativity description of some energy momentum tensor moving on an ADS background, and there's the conformal field theory and the charges of the conformal field theory, which can't have any H bar in them because the first relation that's claimed is a classical to a classical relation. Do you agree with that?
The first relation, sorry, is that?
When you write down the original Maldacena or Whitney, Polchinski, or whoever, correspondence that they wrote down between, ADS5 cross S5 and the conformal field theory, there's a first level which is classical. It says it's also the level you see when you look at the holographic renormalization group. You see perturbations of a classical energy momentum tensor set equal to an operator product expectation value in a conformal field theory. So there's a leading order term, and the leading order term is often claimed as great evidence for the correspondence, and it is evidence for a correspondence. But it's a correspondence between two theories, each of which are at H bar equals zero. Then there's a claim that there are corrections to the conformal field theory, which involve the constant H bar, and there are corrections to the gravitational theory in the bulk, which involve the constant H bar. But it seems to me you're using the kind of argument people use when they talk about the classical to classical correspondence.
But So let's suppose that, well, if on the boundary I have a quantum field theory, then the introduction of the brain and the construction that it's gonna, since I can still use the same field theory, then it's gonna be a quantum field theory also in that case. So I can say that, if there is a quantum field theory, conformal field theory, quantum conformal field theory on the boundary, then the whole setup it's gonna have this kind of interpretation.
If I write just an expectation value of a one-point function or a two-point function for the conformal field theory, can it be order zero in H bar? I think it can. In ordinary quantum field theory, there's a lot of things that we can measure that we can describe in terms of the quantized Maxwell field, which is zeroth order in H bar, which are where the expectation value of the quantum operator is equal to the solution of some classical field equation.
So I would suggest that, so there is now a comment by Roberto that I think want to comment on the same point. And afterwards, I would suggest that Antonia continues with the presentation to the end. But first, Roberto.
Okay, so I just want to say that, I mean, none of this discussion pertains to this particular setup. You're asking questions about just ADS-CFT in general, right? Not about this particular instantiation of ADS-CFT, because the holographic stress tensor, or the stress tensor that Antonia is talking about, is the holographic stress tensor that one uses in ADS-CFT. Now, the way that H-bar appears here is, as you say, it's not that what you have is N, I mean, because this is supposed to be a large N-gauge theory.
Right.
So in this case, what you have is the planar limit of a large N-gauge theory. That's a saddle point, as a classical saddle point, as you know very well. That's the master field. And that in the planar diagrams, you have all loops in the planar limit. So in that sense, it's in that sense that this is a quantum theory. It's like when you take the planar limit of any quantum field theory that has a well-defined large N limit, that includes all loops that are described in paired planar diagrams. And it's in that sense that H-bar appears. There's nothing else here. It's just ordinary ADS-CFT. I don't know if this helps, but if one applies the ADS-CFT dictionary here, then you get H-bar in the right place. This diminution is proportional to H-bar. H-bar multiplied by the central charge of the CFT. But there's H-bar in here. Because in ADS-CFT, what you get is that things like the central charge of the CFT is described in terms of ADS radius measured in units of the Planck length. That's where H-bar enters, if you want.
Good, okay. So let's, thank you. I don't know if that solves Laurent's issue, but it allows me to imagine that there's an answer to our question.
Yeah, the large N limit, of course, it's a sort of semi-classical limit. So in the sense that it's giving you, if you want to compute what's the path integral, then you're expanding around the saddle point, a large N. The large N, so N in that sense enters like H-bar. So in that, I mean, it's not the same as H-bar.
Roberto, it always drives me crazy when somebody says 1 over N plays the role of H-bar, but H-bar is certain amount of erg seconds. And I really want to insist that that's not a dimensionless number.
Yes.
Perhaps we can move this discussion to them, so that Antonia can first finish her presentation, and then we can extensively discuss all these points.
Fine, Alex, I'm safe.
Okay, great, thank you.
So, up to now, I think it's perfect that we have the whole stuff, because up to now I introduced the setup, and now I would like to show you how we can use this setup to compute quantum correction using a classical setup. So we have analyzed I tried to describe with some details the whole setup. There are more details that I didn't mention. That's well, interesting. With these are solutions that can be explored also in different ways, especially, for example, the solution on the brain can be, for example, further explored from other point of view. It includes this, this quantum correction. Well, we have analyzed this in particular is the generalized entropy for this system and the holographic complexity. So I will be very brief. So using this setup, basically, it's possible to derive an effective three-dimensional action starting from a four-dimensional classical gravitational action with a brain. So there is the term given for the brain. And then the degrees of freedom that are integrated are giving the higher order corrections in the effective three-dimensional actions. And the degrees of freedoms that they remain, they can be described by the CFT act. Then using this, this equivalence, let's say, between the two, the four-dimensional and the three-dimensional theory, one can calculate, for example, the entropy and see that the bulk entropy that is given by the four-dimensional area and what it is given by the standard calculation in the bulk is equal to what in the three-dimensional perspective is the higher curvature, the world entropy, because we have also higher curvature terms. And then there is the entropy of the CFT that we say that we leave, the CFT that lives in the presence of the black hole and can be also obtained directly from the subtraction, because we can calculate this quantity. Now, if we use this result in Black-hole thermodynamics, we can see that interestingly, what happens is that the first and the second law are satisfied, and this shows that the interpretation of the brain world is consistent. So, as we do that. And the first law in particular is a non-trivial test of geographic interpretation of brain worlds, because it's not immediately obvious that it must hold. Indeed, on the left-hand side here, we have a quantity on the left and on the right-hand side, we have quantity that belongs to different worlds, basically. And the correct entropy for the first law is given by the bulk horizon area. But the mass and the spin, so here I use the first law for the rotating black holes. So the mass and spin, they are defined and measured on the brain. So it's not trivial to get this equality. And this was something that we found using this holographic setup. Another quantity that we calculated in order to understand using this setup is the holographic complexity. The holographic complexity, I'm not giving an introduction to that because I think it has been mentioned several times during the past year. It's related to the puzzle that the black hole, the interior volume grows bigger, the black hole interior volume grows bigger and bigger all the time as space stretches towards the center. And the question that Susskind tried to answer is how is this flow encoded in the boundary theory? And a proposal is that one of using holographic complexity. So I just mentioned here Susskind, but of course there are perimeter, there are groups that have contributed in very important way to the subject. So up to now, in holographic complexity, the discussion was always assume that the bulk is classical. And it describes CFT to the leading order in the large N. What we want to do using this setup, because there are this quantum correction, as we mentioned, is to go beyond this leading order in the large C expansion and define the property of holographic complexity at this order in a system that is equal to 3. So the next step is that to consider the two famous prescriptions to calculate the holographic complexity, that are the CV, the volume complexity, and the action complexity, and include the finite C effect in the calculation. So we can compute these two quantities, and these two quantities are different. The first one, the analogy, so the AC is given by the on-shell gravitational action on the Wheeler-DeWitt patch divided by H bar. And this Wheeler-DeWitt patch is the Gaussian domain of dependence of a bulk space like a hypersurface that is anchored to the boundary time slice. And yeah, this is one proposal. And then there is another proposal that is so-called the volume complexity. And it's derived, it's calculated in terms of the volume of an extrema slice divided by G Newton and a constant, a length scale that is usually it's the ADS rings. This proposal, it has a strong motivation from the tensor network perspective, but nowadays there are studies about the requirement for more general functionals in this recent paper. So what we expect in our system is that we can have an expansion game. We have that the complexity can be equal to the living order to the classical solution, to the classical result. And then there should be some correction given by the semi-classical back reaction and correction terms given by the higher curvature corrections. And also because there was this action for the CFT, there should be the complexity also of the state of the quantum fields in the bulk. So this is what we expect, and this expression is schematic, but it resembles the quantum corrected holographic entanglement entropy, where we also have also this kind of expansion. The result that we find for the VC formula for the volume complexity is that for the rate of growth of the complexity is that it resembles at the first order the standard results. It gives at the first order the standard results, and then there are corrections here that depends on these two parameters. So remember that N, it was basically the effective Planck scale on the brain, and mu is the parameter, it's a parameter that controls the mass of the black holes, the quantum pitita. And interestingly, using the generalized entropy that I defined before, we saw that the rate of complexity increases in this way, as expected. Because of this correction, we can also say that the quantum pitita computes at a faster rate respective to the standard pitita, to the pitita. Also, what we have found is that these terms, it's all given by the back reaction, and the purely bulk field effects are not there. But this could be a feature of this particular very symmetric setup, in which we have the Z2 symmetry and we don't have any Heisenhilbert, and the brain is purely tensional. So we expect that in a different setup, the result can be different. For example, if there are terms on the brain. Also, we perform the calculation for the Scott action complexity that involves the Wheeler-DeWitt patch. And as you see in this case, there is part of the computation includes going close to the singularity, or is close to the singularity. What we found using this prescription, I'm skipping all the details, all the technical details, but this calculation is it's involved and includes different parts, different terms. the result that we get is that the rate is independent of the effective coupling on the brain. So basically, the result is always the same, independently of the effective coupling. Even though all the terms of the action on the Wheeler-DeWitt patch, they singularly, they depend on the effective coupling that is given by the ratio of the two central charge. When we sum them, then there is a cancellation of the different terms, and the result in the end is independent of the effective coupling. So this was also noticed in other kind of setups without the black hole, with the brain. Therefore, we have that another kind of different setups were analyzed. And therefore, we have that in the end, the rate of complexity grow for the action, it doesn't reproduce the complexity rate of the BTZ when we send the effective coupling to zero. And since the same parameters, as we have seen, they control the inverse tension of the brain, it doesn't distinguish between the different work geometries. So it's the same result, and it doesn't go in this. It doesn't go in this way. Now the conclusion. We get this result, and we think that this result is given by the discontinuity in the limit. So the fact that it's not possible to get the standard BTZ result is coming from the discontinuity in the character of the singularity. Because I've told you before, when I analyzed the metric of this quantum BTZ, that there is a curvature singularity. It's different. It's different from the standard BTZ. And since the Wheeler-DeWitt patch, as we saw from the sketch before, it reaches the inner singularity, the structure of the singularity contributes to that. So our results point to a more fundamental characteristic of the action complexity. That is that it is a magnitude. That allows to probe the black hole interior in a more precise way than the volume complexity, because we have different results, and it seems to see the structure of the singularity. So in conclusion, I will just recap what I showed to you. If I showed you an exact solution that allows us to compute the generalized entropy, including the von Neumann entropy of the conformal field theory, we verify the first law of black hole thermodynamics for this entropy. And we have also seen that the solution allows to compute quantum correction to the volume complexity and in principle to the action complexity, even though the result that we get is different between the two. The quantum corrected volume complexity formula correctly reproduces the expected computation rate for semi-classical black hole using SGEN, the generalized entropy, and instead the action complexity remains still puzzling because it doesn't give the correct limit, classical limit. So we have seen that this may be related to the sensitivity of the action complexity proposal to the singularity, that in our system is different from the standard BTZ.
Thanks, Antonia, for the great talk. Okay, are there questions? There have been many already. But I'm sure there will be many more. So while people are thinking, I also have some questions. So first, so perhaps a set of questions I had about the late time volume complexity. You have shown this formula at some point, and I had at least two questions about that, and in particular, so first, why there is no kappa dependence? Because I mean, I think originally what we have shown was a solution with Boole and
In this case, I'm just considering the quantum BTZ. That means that kappa is equal to minus one.
Okay. I missed that detail. Started from the simplest configuration that you could have. So as far as I understand, a spherically symmetric solution and one single brain. But could you generalize that to different black holes or rotating ones, and also
The metric, the IDSC in supermetric is it's axially symmetric. So it's already a generalization of the. Well, it is not a spherical symmetry, but also probably, I didn't mention that there is the rotation, it's possible to study also the rotating solution. So for the rotating solution, we studied the black hole thermodynamics, the orographic stress energy tensor, but we didn't analyze, for example, the holographic complexity for the rotating solution. So that would be, for example, really a possible generalization of what has been seen in this case. And it's even interesting because of these different results, you get this discrepancy, let's say, between the volume and the action. It might be interesting to see what happened in that case.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. But also probably it would be interesting to look at actions that also contain higher derivatives, right? Because that would, on the one hand, mimic quantum gravitational corrections, and on the other hand, if you have sufficiently, if you have at least two more derivatives in the action, say up to cubic order, that might be enough to get rid of the singularity, and in that case, you could really see if the problem with the classical limit of the action complexity could be really be related to the singularity, or not? Yeah. Do you agree?
So, the bulk theory is it doesn't have higher curvature terms in this case that are considered, but. But the effective field theory that is obtained on the brain, it has a higher curvature terms, and they enter at an higher order in the effective coupling parameter, basically. So if you are saying to me if it's possible, well, maybe considering in the bulk already the theory with the higher curvature correction and see what happened. The brain, I think the ADS symmetric, the Einstein equation without higher curvature correction, but starting directly with the bulk and higher curvature terms might be might change the situation.
Okay, thanks. So there is another question by David.
Okay, so it's a question I should actually know the answer to, but I never did. So, you know, because we have accelerated black hole, in principle, there should be, you know, radiation in the system. And the question is, and I don't know if, you know, in this situation, there is really a radiation because it's a uniform acceleration, which is very strange. But if there is a radiation, would it have any effect on your calculation? Or, I don't know.
In the case, well, for the calculation of the, I don't know exactly. In the case of the holographic complexity, I think it's not going to change too much. Even though some of the features that we, well, some. So I guess what you're thinking is maybe if there is a radiation and also the position of the brain can change. Like the dynamical. Is this the direction of
nothing about? Yes, maybe the radiation is only at infinity, and you are not. I don't know. On one side, you are actually reaching infinity, I think. So,
may I I don't know if you guys know, there was a very magnificent paper by Bryce DeWitt in which he addressed this question in general, whether a charge or a mass that was free falling in the Schwarzschild solution would radiate to infinity. And the conclusion was that it didn't, in spite of what the equivalence principle would say. It's a great paper.
May I add something? I yes. agree with Lee that that's a marvelous paper. So, and I recommend it to everyone here. But here, the point to reply David's question is that, first of all, it's one can very clearly see that there's no radiation here, because outside the black hole, you have a globally defined time electric vector. So it's, in that sense, I mean, it's the same situation as Lee was saying, like the Schwarzschild black hole, and you put anything outside it and it's not going to radiate. So if you remove the black hole from here, if you put any mass, I mean, there's, of course, the black hole horizon, but there's no acceleration horizon. And the reason that this doesn't radiate, even if it's a black hole that's accelerating, if you have a mass that's accelerating, is what you referred to before. That this is what in ADS is called the regime of slow acceleration. So what happens in this case? So normally when you have something that's uniformly accelerating, you have an acceleration horizon, and then the radiation appears in the region beyond the acceleration horizon, which is where the metric is time dependent. Okay, so that would be in the case where you would have this regime of large enough acceleration. When you're in ADS, what happens is that if you're in a regime of slow acceleration, then the wavelength or the distance to the horizon would be larger than the ADS radius. And the wavelength of the radiation would be larger than the ADS radius. So they don't fit inside the space-time, this acceleration horizon and this radiation. I mean, I say in quotes, they don't fit. But that's the reason that these wavelengths, the wavelength of the radiation and the distance to the acceleration horizon, are larger than the ADS radius. So they are not there, actually. If you think of ADS as a box, these things are outside the box. So that's why, in this case, there's no acceleration. The regime of fast acceleration that you, David, know well, that in this case, you would get it in the case that your brain, instead of having ADS geometry, if your brain has a de Sitter geometry, then that's what you get, that what corresponds to the regime of large acceleration. And in that case, you do have a horizon, an acceleration horizon, which is the de Sitter horizon, and you would have radiation in the upper wedge of de Sitter. And that's something that would have an effect here, but it would be a different setup. And it's something that might can be interesting, but it's a different setup.
Are there other questions or comments? Okay, I don't see other questions. On the other hand, there have been many already during Antonia's presentation. Okay, so I would suggest to be close the discussion, and I would ask you all to unmute yourself to thank Antonia.